When you hear somebody speaking Polish, another person speaking Persian, they sound like totally different languages, don't they? But listen more closely and you'll hear similarities, like how one of the Persian words for mother is mada, and in Polish it's matka. That's because both languages belong to a large family known as the Indo-European languages, a group that contains over 400 languages and dialects: Polish, Persian, English, French, German, Russian, Icelandic. The list goes on. But if you trace all those languages to their roots, exactly where and when did they come from? It's a 200-year-old question, topic of controversy. My next guest thinks he may have found the answer. Quentin Atkinson is a senior lecturer in psychology at the University of Auckland in New Zealand. He joins us by phone. Welcome back, Dr. Atkinson, to Science Friday.
Hello, thank you.
Yeah. Hi there. So you think you found the answer?
We do, yes.
Tell us about it.
Okay, well, the short story is that in the paper we apply methods from evolutionary biology and epidemiology that had been used to trace the origin of virus outbreaks by studying the DNA of the viruses, working out how viruses are related. And then if you know where you've found the different samples of the virus around the world, you can trace back along, the family branches of the tree and trace all the way back to the root of the tree, to the origin. And so what we did was apply the same approach to languages. So there's this, as you mentioned, this enormous family of related languages, the Indo-European languages, stretching from Iceland in the west to as far as Sri Lanka in the east. And we use these methods so rather than looking at viruses, we're looking at languages, and rather than looking at the DNA of the viruses to work out how they're related, we're looking at the words of the languages, build the family tree of the languages, and then look at where they are today and trace back along the branches of the family tree to the origin.
And did you find a common origin?
Yes. So there are two competing theories for where these languages came from. The first theory was put forward by Maria Gimbutas, an archaeologist, and she argued that the languages spread out from the Russian steppes region about 5,000 to 6,000 years ago, and that's linked to archaeological evidence for an expansion at that time. And then the alternative theory is that the languages spread much earlier from Anatolia, what is now Turkey, with the expansion of farming. And that would have been 8,000 to 9,500 years. So what we were able to do was apply these methods and test between the competing theories. And we found overwhelming support for the Anatolian farming theory, so that the languages spread from Anatolia with farming.
Hmm. Well, what do you look for in the language that's common? How do you do your detective work that way?
Right. So what we use are what are called cognates. And so we're looking at the words in the different languages, and within the words, we're looking for cognates. We looked at about 200 different meanings, basic vocabulary terms like hand, foot, mother, father, fire, water, mountain, that kind of thing. Across about, over 100 of the Indo-European languages. And for all these meanings, we're looking for these cognates. These are words that show similar form that linguists deduce indicates that they're related via common ancestry. So an example would be the kind of words that you mentioned in your introduction, words for mother in some of the different languages, or the word five is another example of a word that's cognate across many Indo-European languages. So English uses five, German uses fünf, Swedish is fem, Dutch is vip. They're all Germanic languages as a subgroup of Indo-European, and the fact that they share these forms indicates that they're related via common ancestry. So we were able to build up a large set of these cognates, over 6,000 across the 200 meanings in 100 languages. And from that, we can build this, it's our data matrix, we call it. And so if you imagine down the left-hand side of the data matrix, you've got all your languages, and then along the top of the data matrix, you've got all the possible cognates that we've identified, and you fill in that matrix by putting a zero if that language has a doesn't have the cognate, and a one if the language does have that cognate. And if you fill that in for all the cognates, you get this sequence of ones and zeros for each language. And it's a bit like having a sequence of DNA for each language. And that's the data that we then input into our analysis.
Interesting. Talking with Quentin Atkinson on Science Friday from NPR. I'm Ira Flatow. What was there about that spot? What was happening in Turkey at that time to make it such a hot spot for language development there?
Well, the argument is that that, and we know this from the archaeological record, that there was that agriculture was being introduced onto the Anatolian plain, beginning about 10 to 9,500 years ago. There's some wonderful sites in Anatolia, like Çatalhöyük, one of the better studied ones, where through the layers of the archaeological record, you can see the beginning of agriculture. And so those populations, or some of their descendants, eventually started to move out from Anatolia and taking agriculture with them. The idea, I guess, is that the agricultural populations would have been growing, population density would have been increasing, and they would have expanded out. And so they take their agricultural technology with them and their language, and that process, generation by generation, would have expanded the Indo-European languages, or the languages that would then become Indo-European.
Let me get, see if I can get a phone call or two in here. Damon in Curryville, Missouri. Hi, Damon.
Hi. I would like to ask the gentleman what he believes the role of glossolalia might play in the foundation of all languages.
You mean those noises, the clicking, the popping sounds that people make
yes,
their
yes,
mouths?
Yeah. Yes, just making random noises that are kind of the natural language of all humans.
All right, then. Good question.
Right. Well, there are lots of theories about the origins of language. I suppose, yeah, it's a multi-staged theory. We don't think there's any one magical thing that happened that could have given rise to language in humans. But glossolalia, I'm not sure whether... So this is where people just sort of spontaneously start vocalizing and using speech sounds that perhaps don't make any sense, or some people think they're in another language. It's often associated with religion. Certainly it shows just how much we like to generate sounds, and even if they don't make any sense. And so perhaps it's reflecting that underlying drive in us. Yeah, but I'm not sure. I would want to link it in particular to the origin of language.
What else? Quick last question. What else would you like to know? Where do you go with the research now?
Well, so what I love about this these new methods that we're using is that we can play out the history of some of these cultural groups, like the Indo-Europeans, in time and space, so through time and across the landscape. And so what I'd like to do, and with the team that I've been working with, is look at other parts of the world. We're looking at Australasia and Central America, and trying to see what the languages can tell us about history there.
Mm-hmm. Well, we wish you good luck, and thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you.
Quentin Atkinson is a senior lecturer in psychology at the University of Auckland in New Zealand. That's about all the time we have for this hour. Our program's senior producer is Annette Heist. Charles Berquist is our director. Flora Lichtman is our multimedia editor. Associate senior producer, Christopher Intagliata. Luis Cavedio is our Spanish language producer. Sam Flato is our production assistant. Eli Chen is our intern. It's her last day. Oh, Eli's leaving us. We hope she had fun. We certainly had fun having her here, and we wish her good luck in her next association. Neil Rauch is our technical director. He's not spinning the dials today. Manoli Weatherall is at the controls here in New York. If you missed any part of our program, go to iTunes, subscribe to our podcast. If you have portable media and you want to take it along on your tablet, you can also do that on iTunes or Android. And go to our website at sciencefriday.com. And we're tweeting, of course, all week long at SciFry, S-C-I-F-R-I. And you can go to our Facebook page and join the conversation there, too. I'm Ira Flato in New York.